All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Ran Morimoto, and with me on stage today is Chris Amaris. And this session is best practices in integrating on-premise data centers to Azure. Effectively, what we're covering in this session is for organizations that have been using Windows, Active Directory, building VMs on-prem for years now. Microsoft has Azure Infrastructure as a Service, where you can now put virtual guest sessions. And as much as you can have guest sessions on-prem and in the cloud, what we're going to show you today in the session is how you can build templates both on-prem and in the cloud, build sessions the same, manage them, monitor them. Because this is one really the challenges, is that a lot of the models that are out there, it's, you kind of see that guest session in the cloud as being an island of itself. But how do you patch it? How do you monitor it? How do you update it? And so that's really from the process. We're going to be using System Center as the main tool to be able to go through that process. This is a level 300 session. We're going to go, not going to cover any of the marketing stuff. I'm going to make the assumption you understand what AD is and a virtual machine and Hyper-V and some of the System Center components. So we're actually going to just dive right into the hands-on pieces of implementations. What I do want to be able to cover is we have blogged this information. A lot of times I sit in sessions and you know, you hear the guy up on the stage show you great demos, and he spent weeks and months building these great demos, and then you try to do it back at your office, and it's kind of like, okay, what did the guy do? So what we did is we actually blogged, and this is on our PowerPoint deck. If you go to networkworld.com/community/Morimoto, it's my blog site. The step-by-step processes that Chris has created here in Orchestrator are in a blog post. I also have a lot of the earlier things. About a year ago, I posted a number of things on going through the step-by-step process of building out Hyper-V and what have you. So you don't have to worry about going through and seeing something, but then try to figure out what did these guys do. We went through and covered the stuff in detail. Screenshots, step-by-steps. The scripts are actually in here, so Chris screenshotted and covered the actual script. So hopefully when you walk out of here, you'll get a chance to actually be able to sit down and build this out within your environment. As a background, Chris and I, we're not Microsoft employees, so we're not here to send you any marketing stuff, tell you something that what doesn't work or where these things fit in. We live this stuff every single day. We build these environments for our customers and implement on-premise and Azure-based systems. We've written some books on it, Windows 2012 Unleashed, System Center 2012 Unleashed, and a book that we wrote earlier this year, it's about 125 pages. It's called Microsoft's Hybrid Cloud, and what this book covers is a lot of what we are going to demo today, building out VMs, building this stuff up in Orchestrator. But like I said, we have this information up on our blog site, so you have a lot of information there. So kind of as I got about three setup slides, and then we'll go into the demo pieces. The data centers of today are environments where effectively you have guest sessions that are running on-premise. And when I say guest sessions, we're going to talk about it as a Microsoft and a VMware type environment. Because we walk into a lot of organizations and they don't have a pure Microsoft Hyper-V environment. So we'll show you the Microsoft way to do things, and we're going to show it to you without Microsoft infrastructure in place. But effectively, everything today in most environments is on-prem. Storage, networking, configurations, Active Directory. When we talk about the stretched network in this hybrid environment, some of your stuff is going to be up in Azure. So you're going to have virtual guest sessions and Active Directory on-premise, but then we're going to stretch some of the stuff up into Azure in the cloud. I talk about System Center. That's kind of the tool that we'll be using to be able to do monitoring and patching and updating. Chris will cover a whole section on Orchestrator to automate these processes. And again, the scripts that we talk about that I posted on my blog site will show you information about the step-by-step procedures. One of the things that you heard in the keynote yesterday is what Microsoft calls Express Route. And what this is a whole new environment that allows you the ability of having a high-speed connection between your data center and Azure. Up until now, you've had to go through the general internet, create a site-to-site VPN. Now you can actually sign up with Equinix and with AT&T initially. Microsoft has announced partnerships with a number of other carriers. But effectively now, you can have a very high-speed connection directly from your data center to Azure. So that way, as you set up these connections, is that it's a site-to-site VPN connection, but a very high-speed connectivity to build up these guests. Where we really found and building out a lot of these environments, over the last 18 months, we've worked with some of the largest data centers in the world building up large-scale operations that they have. Containerfuls, when we build servers for these hosters, is that a shipping container will have 1,000 processors inside there, quad-core, 8-core processors. We were learning processes of how to move 50,000 VMs from one continent to another in a disaster recovery failure process. But what we learned in this process also was there was a cost model that these guys were able to do things at 46 cents on a dollar versus what our largest corporate customers were able to do. And they're driving right now over the next 2-3 months to be able to get that down to about 33, 34 cents on a dollar. What this really means to all of us out there in the corporate world that are building our own data centers is that the guys that are hosting this stuff is building this stuff cheaper than we could do it in-house. So we have two options about a year or two from now. Either use their services, which, of course, they're not going to sell it to you at 33 cents per dollar, but they're going to have a profit or markup, but it's still going to be 25 or 50% lower than what we could build it in-house. Or what we're going to try to talk to you about today is how you can automate the systems so you can actually take advantage of a lot of what we did and how we were able to drive those costs down through automation so that you don't have people sitting there manually running processes. It doesn't take you 3 days to build a VM. Instead, it's going to take you 3 minutes to build these VMs. These are the type of things that we're going to go through and show you how you can optimize it to be able to drive those costs down. When we go through and build out these data centers, a lot of people ask the question, where do I start? Because you have Azure out there, and I can build a VM. I have my on-premise environment. But what we do is we go through and say, find a single workload that you might have, something simple. We took our www website, our corporate website, we moved it up to Azure. Something that doesn't change that often. We make modifications every 2-3 weeks to the content on the site. It's a self-contained web and SQL environment. We grabbed that, we threw it up to Azure. And we did that about a year and a half, 2 years ago in the infrastructure environment. The other thing that you want to be able to do is set up a network, what we call network virtualization. And we'll show you that in setting up your connection between on-premise and Azure. That will allow you to basically see those cloud-based systems as if they were just on-premise. So where you can ping local systems and they're on your 10-dot network is that you can stretch your network so that these VMs up in Azure are also on your 10-dot network. So that provides you with the ability of if these things are on the network and this is on the network and you might have another data center that's on the network, is that all of these VMs show up in System Center as a single environment, and the guest sessions can be on-prem or up in the cloud. So place that again, we'll go through and walk through that process. It's basically a five-step process. Establish a base environment. It's all based on Active Directory. AD 2003, AD 2008, the Active Directory really is nothing more than just to join the guest sessions. And what we'll show you is not only the ability that you can join guest sessions on-prem that you do today, but you'll actually be able to build these VMs up in Azure, join those VMs to Active Directory. So again, you're not building VMs in this island that you're trying to figure out how to manage and patch and update, but they're actually being part of your main core Active Directory. Stretch that network, virtual site-to-site networking. Then you can do the alerting, the patching, the monitoring, and at the very end today, we're going to show you Orchestrator. A lot of the best practices that Chris has gone out and built over the last year and a half, 2 years, building these environments build out step-by-step processes. So here's that first step, base infrastructure, Active Directory. That's where things join. Hyper-V, we're going to show you, like I mentioned, two different ways. We're going to show you the Hyper-V method. We're going to show you the non-Hyper-V method if you're using VMware, where I can have VMware servers on-prem, and I can still use the tools to build the guest sessions up in Azure and take those Azure-based guest sessions, have them join to Active Directory and manage those, just like I do Hyper-V and VMware sessions on-prem. So we don't necessarily care from our perspective whether it's running on Hyper-V or VMware. Windows 2012 R2 virtual machine. So the stuff that's running up in Azure is running under Hyper-V. However, you can go through and have virtual guest sessions on-prem. I always get asked the question, well, if we can do VMware here and Hyper-V here, what's the advantage of going to Hyper-V on-prem? Is that what Microsoft is building in the workload is the ability down the line here for us to be able to do replication between the on-prem and Azure. And so if you had Hyper-V R2 down here, Hyper-V obviously is running up here. I can do Hyper-V replica. I can fail over and fail back. So there's advantage down the line that if you have Hyper-V in both locations, you could do site-to-site failure and recovery. But if you happen to have VMware today and you want to build out guest sessions, there's nothing that prevents you from being able to do it. I also talk about two tools, Virtual Machine Manager and App Controller. These are two tools that are available that allow you to go through and create guest sessions. If you typically go to a Microsoft guest session, they'll say that you need Virtual Machine Manager, you need System Center, App Controller to manage this. Again, what we'll be showing here is the ability of going through and setting up an environment where we're just going to use straight Orchestrator. We're going to be using PowerShell to actually build guest sessions up in the cloud and using the Microsoft templates. So that way we don't need a lot of that functionality that is built into Virtual Machine Manager. So let me go through and switch into our first set of demos, and then from here on out, that was all the lead-up slides, and now at this point, it's just going to be demo and information space. So what we have here is effectively, I'm right now going to start off in the Virtual Machine Manager world. So this is a Microsoft App Controller, where we have connected into App Controller or on-premise environment and Microsoft up in the cloud. So in here, I have virtual machines that are in the cloud. I have virtual machines that are on-prem. I have a couple of virtual machines that are set up. I have a public cloud, and this is where Azure is set up. So in this case here, I have an on-prem data center. I have a private cloud set up in my other data center. I have Microsoft Azure, so I see public cloud out of my private cloud systems. When I look at my clouds, I can go through and see the cloud configurations. But when I look at my virtual machines, what you'll notice here is that I just see a list of virtual machines. Over on the side here, I can see whether it's an Azure virtual machine or whether it's a corporate virtual machine. But again, when we start looking at these things, it doesn't matter whether the VM is in this data center, in a private data center, in another site, or whether it's up in Azure. I manage my virtual guest sessions, I patch them, I edit, modify, fail over these guest sessions as if they're one session within the environment themselves. This all connects out to Microsoft Azure. And if you've ever set up an Azure account, you can set up a virtual guest session, you can build these VMs one-off. What we'll be showing you is the ability of creating these virtual machines just by connecting to them, pointing to them, and building out the guest sessions. So now getting into that connectivity. You got guest sessions here. You may have gone through and set up an Azure subscription and you built some guest sessions today. What we're going to do is take this next step, which is stretching your corporate network, building a site-to-site VPN, so that way these two guest environments, both on-premise and in Azure, are connected. And so what Chris is going to go through and do is show you what Microsoft calls the NVGRE, is a network virtualization communications. It's nothing more than a site-to-site. These site-to-sites can be connected with your traditional routers, like a Cisco ASA, or if you don't have, say, a Cisco environment for infrastructure, you can set up an old RRAS server. And Microsoft supports in Windows 2012 R2 the ability of setting up RRAS server. You can do a site-to-site connection and build the connectivity across. So I'm going to pass it over to Chris to go through the first round of demos.
Thank you, Rand. So you'll notice here that on the screen we have essentially a tunnel. So we have our on-premise data center and we have the Azure cloud. So what we want to do is be able to treat the Azure cloud as part as an additional data center, as part of our internal infrastructure. It's not a cloud that I have to access through any sort of different methods. I can use standard protocols and my standard tools to do that. And we'll show that a little bit later on. But in this first demo, what I wanted to show is how do you connect? How do you set that up? So I'm going to go ahead and switch over. And we have our Azure environment here. So what I have is I have an on-premise data center, and I have the Azure cloud, but they're not connected at this point. So what I want to do is connect them. So I'm going to go down to networks. And I have some already existing, and we'll look at those a little bit later on. But I'm going to create a new one right now. And so I want to show you how easy it is. So select new, network services, and virtual network. And I do custom create. So once I have that selected, I need to give it a name so that I know what that virtual network is. So I'm going to call that CCO Lab Virtual Network. And then I have an affinity group here. And what an affinity group does is it groups everything that I create using that I associate with that affinity group into the same location. So it keeps it in the same region and in the same section so that they can connect anything that's in that affinity group can connect up as if it's an internal network. So I need to have a unique one for each of my virtual networks. So I'm going to create a new affinity group for this virtual network so it will be an isolated network that I can connect up. And you see it asks me, where do I want to place that? So I want to place that in West US, and I'll give it a new name. And once I've done that, So one of the things about having this sort of stretched data center is I don't want to use the public DNS. I don't want to use Azure DNS. I want to use my internal DNS. That's where all my internal systems live. All my Active Directory lives there. My management infrastructure, possibly all my on-premise servers live in that DNS. So to really be a stretched data center, I have to have my Azure virtual network use that same DNS. So when they register their IPs, they register in my local on-premise DNS. So I'm going to set that up here, or not set it up, but tell it where it is. So I'm going to call that DC09. So this pre-exists. So this is my on-premise Active Directory server or DNS server. So this address here that I'm entering is really my on-premise data center address. So it's not in Azure. This actually is an address that's in my private on-premise data center, which I haven't connected to yet, but I'm telling it where it's going to be once we connect. And then you'll notice I have only a third option here, but what I want to configure is a site-to-site VPN. So once I select this, then I'm given the options for that. So I could connect to an existing local network, but this is for a new local network. So this new local network is going to be my on-premise network. I've specified the DNS, but I haven't specified what that local network is. So I've selected that. And you notice now I have a fourth option since I have to create that network. And I have to give it a name. So I have to name my local network so I can keep track of it. So I'm going to call it CCO Data Center. And then this VPN address will tell Azure how to connect to it. So this is the address of the VPN server that I'm going to be connecting to. And in the foundation session yesterday, they showed you how to connect up using Virtual Machine Manager. Well, with this, you can connect up to a VPN device, so you're not restricted to only having Virtual Machine Manager workloads talking to the Azure. You can have any workload. So this is going to be a routed network. So this VPN connection is going to be a site-to-site connection. You can run anything over it. It can be physical machines, virtual machines, different hypervisors, or other network infrastructures. So I'm going to give this. So once again, this is a public IP address, so it's not a private IP address. You have to have this. It has to be publicly available. And then now that I've specified what I'm naming my data center, how I get to it, I have to tell it what are my internal IP address spaces. So remember, my domain controller was in the 10.10 network, so that makes sense. That's where my data center is. That's the private network. And I could add multiple ones if I needed to. And then I have to tell it sort of what subnet range I'm going to be using. Actually, in this case, it's going to be 24. So you can see it automatically subnets it for me, so it tells me the range or the addresses. And now that I've done that, I've told it what my on-premise data center looks like, how do I reach it, and what its address space is. So I'll move on. So this virtual network address space is for the Azure space. So I've specified my on-premise data center, so this now is the Azure space. And it very helpfully gives me sort of suggests a range, and it gives me the next address. So my on-premise data center was 10.10.1 or .0, and it's saying, hey, why don't you use 10.10.1? I don't like that personally, so I'm going to use 172. So I'm changing my Azure address space to not be in my 10 series, but instead be in the 172 series. I could keep it in that series, in the 10 series, if I wanted to, but I don't have to. So now that I have that, I need to add a gateway subnet. So this tells the virtual network how does it reach my on-premise network. So this is its routed gateway. So I'm going to go ahead and add that. And I could change this address if I want. I'm going to leave it as is. But I could adjust it if I preferred to have it like .1 or something. So now I've specified both sides of the network, and it starts to create that. So now this will take a little bit of time to be created here. It's actually pretty quick. And so it's actually building up my virtual network. This is actually relatively fast. The next stage will take a little bit longer, so we'll do some things, and I can jump in here and take a look at that. And if I look at the dashboard for this, you can see that I think it's done creating it. Still creating it here. But you can see it gives me a nice graphical image of it. So I can see this is the virtual network, and you'll notice that I have not created a gateway yet, so I'll need to create a gateway as part of this process. But I've got the virtual network on both sides. So I've got my data center, my on-premise data center, and my Azure virtual network here created, and it successfully created that network. So the next step that I have to do is create a gateway, because right now I have the virtual network, but I don't have a gateway to connect to anything. So I'm going to go ahead and create gateway. And you have to know, based on the device that you're using, and we have a link at the end of the presentation that shows you the different devices and what kind of routing they support. So when I create a gateway, I have to know what kind of routing it supports, and that's going to depend on your device. And we'll look at some of the different devices. I'm going to be using Microsoft RAS, so that supports dynamic routing. So I'm going to go ahead and select that and say yes. And here's where our demo has to go a little bit sideways. This takes about 30 minutes, and I don't think you want me to talk for 30 minutes while we're doing this. So I'm going to jump back and do what they do in cooking shows, which is they put something in the oven, and they go to a different oven, and they pull out a cooked dish. So here we have a previously created one. So this is CCO Lab 500, which is different than the one I did before, but it has already had time to finish cooking, so to speak. So it built up the gateway. We're really in the same situation we were, but the gateway has finished building. So what I wanted to do is show what does it look like afterwards, because otherwise we can't really do anything. So once the gateway is built, actually very helpfully, and this is really nice, Microsoft gives you the configuration that you need to do on your VPN side. So we've created the virtual network in Azure. We've created a gateway. And now we need to connect to it. And you know, configuring network devices can be tricky sometimes. So they very helpfully give you the configuration. It supports Cisco systems, Juniper, and Microsoft, of course. Within the Cisco, say, family, there's a number of different devices it'll support. And so what I can do is I'll select Microsoft RAS. And if I click OK here, what it'll do is it's going to generate a configuration file for me. So I'm going to go ahead and open that. And this is PowerShell. So it actually is not just a generic PowerShell script. It actually has embedded in it the connection information I need to connect. It will actually build up the RAS server on a plain server if I need to. And it even includes the authentication information. It's shared a shared secret. So everything is there, ready to go. And what I wanted to do was actually show that. So since I've already built that up, I actually pre-built a server. And this server has that IP address connected to it. So it's a server that has one leg in the public sphere. So it has a public address and a private address in my data center. And here is that PowerShell script. That's the same PowerShell script, and I can just run that. And this script will, from a plain vanilla Windows 2012 system, will build RAS and configure it and connect to my Azure data center. So it'll take a bit of time, so I'm going to stop the demo here and hand it back to Rand.
So what Chris has done at this point is taken our on-prem network and stretched it to the cloud. Through the processing time, we'll zip back into that configuration. So the next step is now that you have your environment set up so that you have effectively one visual on-prem and cloud, we're going to go through the monitoring aspect. And how many of you are using System Center Operations Manager today in your environment? Good half, three quarters of you. So System Center Operations Manager, as you use it on-prem today, you basically can go through and monitor these VMs up in the cloud. Nothing more than just another subnet of VMs. You don't have to go through and set up any special gateways. They're not external to your environment. They are stretched off your environment. So all we're going to do is use System Center Operations Manager. We're going to monitor these Azure guest sessions. There's some management packs available. Chris will talk about them, but most of the management packs that you have today, your Windows 2012, your Hyper-V management packs, those are the things that we'll be monitoring and managing the Azure virtual guest sessions. And all of the alerts, reports, everything that you're doing today will continue to operate within System Center Operations Manager. And so back to Chris.
So the idea is that if you have Operations Manager or any other management tool, that you want to be able to, say, Configuration Manager, you want to be able to manage the systems that you deploy in Azure over the stretched data center exactly like you do your on-premise workloads. So you don't want to have to say, there's a management pack, I have to set up something different, I have to do anything different. You'd like to be able to monitor and manage them exactly the same. You don't want to have to learn a new tool in order to manage one, or say, well, I need to do some troubleshooting on my on-premise, I use this tool, I'm troubleshooting Azure, I use a different tool. You'd really like to get the same set of tools. So that's what I'm going to show now, is how that works. So I'm going to switch over to the demos. And what we have here is a stretched data center, a pre-existing stretched data center. So it has, I take that back. Because this was disconnected before, when I looked down, it was green. So I thought I was looking at the previously connected one. This is actually the data center we just connected. So that script I was running has finished connecting. So you can see we're already sending a little bit of information out, and it's finished connecting. So that's cool. We don't have any workloads in here or anything, but we've finished the configuration of it. It's now essentially a stretched data center and communicating. So that's good. But the data center, the existing one, which has workloads here, shows that you can see it's sent quite a bit of information over time, and it has a number of workloads in it. So I have an existing stretched data center already out there. And so what I wanted to show is that using Operations Manager to manage that. So one of the things that I said was I want to manage them exactly the same way. Well, here I'm showing under Windows Computer a view of all of my workloads, my computers, my servers, and they basically look the same. So anybody that's familiar with Operations Manager, my on-premise systems look no different than my cloud-based systems. You'll notice that our cloud naming convention starts with CCO Lab 200, so all of these are cloud systems. But other than the naming convention, I don't see that any differently. I can look at them. I can group them differently if I want to. So for example, I can look at all my on-prem computers, or I can look at my Azure-based computers. The cool thing about this is, how am I distinguishing in this console? How am I distinguishing between the Azure computers and the on-premise computers? I'm actually distinguishing them based on their Active Directory site. So based on standard on-premise information, the only difference in these two views is that it's filtering on Active Directory site. Just so you, in case you don't believe that, you can see here that my selection criteria is with specific Active Directory site name. So I named my Azure site Azure, but it's using Active Directory, so it's not using some fancy discovered Azure property, it's actually just using Active Directory. And with this, once they're being managed as part of my infrastructure, I can do sort of the standard thing. So for example, I could look for any kind of problem, so I can open up and see if there's any alerts. And here I can see that I have a warning alert that says my logical disk fragmentation is high. And this is, once again, a standard management pack-based alert. I can open up a Health Explorer view and see that same information. I could even on this see a summary of that, so it gives me the detailed information about it. I can see when it happened. I could even trigger remediation. So I can click here and select an automatic recovery action that will take place against my Azure cloud, so that the cloud workload is being treated just like an on-premise machine. And so now I've asked it to remediate that. It's going to trigger a defragmentation of that local disk. So other things I can do in here, I can, for example, get availability reports. So if I look at this machine and I want to see how available it's been, and this is sort of the one of the big things that gets requested by executives and management, is they want to see how available something is. They want to know how available their server was over time or something like this. And you could probably figure out how to generate that out of Azure, but you'd want to use the same tools that you're using in your on-prem system as Azure and be able to see that hopefully together. So I can select the time range that I want to get this availability report for. So I'm going to say previous week, Tuesday, and run that. And what I'll see now is it's using the information that it's collected to essentially generate an availability report. So it'll tell me how available it's been over the past week. So I can see here it's saying it's been 100% available. Easily click on that. And I can drill down and see that information on a day-by-day basis rather than one monolithic time frame. And I can see it's been generally available 100% of the time, except for the 12th, and it was available 99.93% of the time. So I can see it was down for a little bit of time on the 12th. And I can get that information for, you know, my on-prem systems or my cloud systems, either way. The other thing I can look at is performance information. So for example, if I select a workload here, I can get a performance view. And here I can see that I've got, what am I looking at here? So I have something graphed, but I don't know what it is. So I'm going to check and see what it is. Ah, memory available. So I can see that it's graphing memory available, and I can see that graph over time for my on-prem, on my cloud workload. I can even see here where it's recognized that there's been alerts. So at key points here, I've fallen below my thresholds. So here it fell below and then went back up. So I've sort of layered in my alert information into this view as well. So one of the things I've said is you're treating the on-prem and the cloud workloads the same. Well, a lot of times I have sort of applications that are going to be using components from each. So I'm going to have here, for example, this finance application is going to have databases that are on-prem, websites that might be on-prem, or also in the cloud. And I want to be able to see that and be able to model that. So if I open up the diagram view, I can see this finance application. Oops. Open diagram view. There we go. And this diagram view is going to show me the model of this application. So I can see that this finance application depends on some databases, some websites, and some operating systems. And guess what? Those operating systems appear to have some sort of unhealthy, something unhealthy about them. If I look at the databases, it'll tell me which ones they are. And these are on-prem databases. And I can look at what websites it depends on. And I see these different websites, but are these on-prem or not? They're being monitored the same. If I look at the properties of these, instance properties, I can see that this particular workload is a cloud-based workload. If I look at this website, I can see that it's an on-prem workload. So essentially, I've got an application here that's composed of different components that are from on-prem and cloud, and they're not distinguishing between them. They're all being monitored the same. By the way, you can see that they're actively monitored. I can see these are healthy. If I look at the unhealthy ones, I can see that one of my workloads here is unhealthy. I could even right-click on this and select Health Explorer and see exactly what the problem is with this one. This one's having available megabyte memory problems. By the way, I'm using extra small workloads, so they have very, very little memory. So this is a pretty common problem to happen. So that's kind of cool. I can also check and see, well, how available? So I've got this application that I've developed. I'm doing this monitoring of on-prem and cloud workloads exactly the same. I'm treating them the same. And I'd like to see, or the finance VP would like to see, what is the availability of this application, which is composed of all these different things. So I can actually go in here and see what my availability has been for that application. So this application that's composed of all these different on-prem and cloud workload components, and it ties up that availability and will tell me what that is. So I'm going to give it that same range previous week. So I want basically a week worth of information here. And I could have this report emailed. And I can see that doesn't look good. It's been red for a certain amount of time, quite a bit of time. And I can see, OK, what's happening here? And I can see in my drill down, my day-to-day drill down, that there was a problem that existed and wasn't resolved until the 12th. So, but once again, bad news, but at least you know what's happening. And I could drill in to see what the root cause of this was. One of the machines was down, actually, so it was tracking that. So I'm essentially treating my on-prem and cloud workloads exactly the same, integrated into the same management, single pane of glass sort of view that management's looking for.
So. Great. So what Chris has shown is that you have workloads both on-prem and the cloud. And this is really where the big difference in Azure workloads come in from a cost basis. We're always asked the question of, is Azure going to make my environment cheaper? And this is something that over the last several months, we've actually have found that if you take your standard workload, say, for example, you had 10 servers, and you're building 10 servers up in Azure, the cost is going to be the same. And so if you try to model it, it's going to be the same. Microsoft has priced Azure to be the same as if you were doing it on-prem. Here's where you actually save money, and this is where Chris will show you in the orchestrator components, is that as you monitor these systems, is that say, for example, your operations has less workload at night. You may have some people that are running online, and maybe on weekends you drop significantly. Do you really need 10 servers running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or at night, can I drop those servers down? So maybe I only have a couple servers on-prem, a couple of servers in the cloud. Or on weekends, maybe I only need a couple servers. And when you drop the servers, you don't pay for Azure workloads. So if you go out and buy $250,000 worth of hardware, it's $250,000 sunk whether you use it at night or weekends or not. Azure, when we go through and monitor it, we identify those workload performance. We decrease the number of servers. We don't pay for those systems. In the morning, we start bringing those workloads back up, and you start paying for them. Cost savings, minimum 43%. We've driven it down to 67% lower by going through and balancing those workloads between on-prem and cloud. That's that big aha moment that we're finding a lot of organizations are determining that Azure can actually be cheaper when you actually use tools like this to bring stuff upline and offline. This next section is on System Center Configuration Manager. It seems like a lot of people use Ops Manager. How many of you are using Configuration Manager, patching, updating, what have you? I'm going to go zip through this because I understand most of you understand the whole patching and management aspects, because I like to leave this more time for the demo on Orchestrator. But effectively, now that you have these guest sessions, you want to patch, you want to update these systems, you want to be able to remote control, do things with the systems. We can use System Center Configuration Manager just like on-prem. So I can look at the systems, I can patch them, I can set groups, I can patch Exchange separately, then I can patch my on-premise web versus what have you. Different configurations. I could do compliance settings, all that stuff, just like in System Center Operations Manager, works the same for Configuration Manager. The cloud approach is I see systems here, I see systems here, and I manage and update them. I might put a distribution point up in Azure, so that way any of my patches and updates are done there, or I might bring the patches up. There's no reason to bring the patches from Microsoft down to my on-prem and push them over my VPN. So there's a lot of things that you could do regarding optimizing that Configuration Manager console. Here's the secret sauce. This is the piece that we felt it was important enough for us to blog about it, to be able to give you this information. But what Chris will show you in this last grouping here is Orchestrator and where the automation process plays in. His scripts will go through and build out guest sessions, effectively creating and leveraging processes. And if you build standards, you build a template on-prem, you want to build that template up in Azure with the same configuration, same settings. He's going to be using PowerShell and Azure PowerShell. This is the ability for you to actually create these guest sessions rapidly. And all of the alert processes, everything gets fed back to System Center Operations Manager. So this is really actually the exciting part of the thing. So all this stuff has been leading up to what you can do with Orchestrator. So back to Chris.
Thank you, Rand. So in this next set of demos, we're really going to be showing automation. So once we've stretched the data center, now my workloads can be seen exactly the same on-premise or in the cloud. Then now, and I showed that with Operations Manager. Now with Orchestrator, I can actually automate things, and it's once again like they're on-premise. So I'm going to go ahead and switch over. So part of the automation thing is reducing the level of effort, right? So how do I reduce the level of effort so I can do things quickly and effectively? So for example, let's say I've seen I have a critical alert on one of my cloud servers, and basically I investigate this and I find I need more capacity. I need to build another workload in the cloud. So once I've done that, I'm looking at it right here. I'd like to just do that. So I'm going to see how hard it is to build an additional workload in the cloud. So I want to burst to the cloud, and I want to do this quickly. I don't want to have to enter a lot of information. I just want to just do it. So here I have an operations manager task, and I've selected that server. I know I need to burst into the cloud. Click on that. So that was one click, right? And I'm bursting into the cloud. So this process I just initiated with one click of a button will now create a new Azure workload. So let's see how that's done. So that process has started, so what I want to do is actually show that. So I'm going to switch over to my Orchestrator console, which is what that triggered. That one click had a SCOM task execute a Orchestrator runbook. So it kicked off an Orchestrator runbook. So here I'm looking at my Orchestrator console. I'm going to refresh that. And you can see right here at 8:56, so this is on PST time, so 8:57, so a minute ago when I clicked that, it kicked off a new runbook to create a new VM. So I can take a look at that. I can see where it is exactly in the process. And we'll go through and look at this in a little more detail. But you can see that's executing right now. So it's literally building up my machine in Azure. In case, just to show that that's actually happening, I'm going to switch back over to my Azure console and look at my cloud services. Oops, nope. Sorry. Wrong object there. My apologies. Cloud services. And I should see right here, I'm deploying a new instance right now as we speak. So once again, one click and it's already doing the deployment. So we'll go back and look and see exactly how is that working. So this is that new VM runbook. I'm going to switch over to the runbook designer. And here you can see that it shows me that it's executing, right? So this is what's running right now. I can see what it does. So it does a number of steps. And this is actually a simplified runbook. So what I did was normally in a production runbook, you'd have a lot of error checking and things like that. I left all that out so we could just see the nice clean flow in here. So a production runbook would be a little more complicated, but not hugely so. So the first thing we do is we get the server number. So I'm building this system automatically. I want to have a server number allocated each time. So I don't want to have to give it a number or give it a name. I want it to be named automatically. So in my case, it's just an incrementing server number to make things easy. And after that, I provision the machine in the virtual network. So it's using my pre-existing virtual network. So I'm not just provisioning the machine in Azure. I'm provisioning it into my affinity group, which makes sure that it's part of my virtual network and thus reachable within my stretched data center. Once it's built, it gets a new IP address for it. And that's because I want to join the domain, but the machine hasn't registered in DNS or done anything. So I have to access it via its IP address and then have it join the domain. So I get its IP address, and I use that IP address to have it join the domain. And I'll drill down on these a little bit more. And then finally, once I've done building it and it's joined the domain, I want that machine to be managed. I want a SCOM agent on that, so it's automatically being managed by my on-premise SCOM infrastructure, so that I don't want to have to say, oh, I better go check with someone and have them install a SCOM agent on it. I want that done automatically. I want it monitored automatically. And by the way, you'll notice in here, there's not a step to install the SCCM agent. That's because I have my SCCM configured, my configuration manager, configured to automatically put an agent on any machine that joins the domain. So as soon as that machine joins the domain, it gets an agent pushed to it, and whatever policies I have get applied to it. And finally, the last step that I do is I increment the server count, because I've used that one count, so I want to have the next machine I build be a new server number. So let's see how this all works under the covers. So getting the server number, essentially in my case, I pick it up from a local file called machine count. So if I look at that, it's really basic. It has a machine count. So the next machine that's being built as we speak is number 17. Why do I use a text file? I could have used a database, but then I'm going to have a SQL query or something like that, and that's going to look messy. What I wanted to show is just a really basic, easy thing to do with that. So that the text file makes it really easy. You read that in and just use that. And I'll show you how that gets incremented at the end of this discussion here. So once I've got the server number, I know that server number that I'm going to be using. So what I want to do is provision it. So I call a runbook. This is a runbook call, so I'm going to look at that runbook that it calls. And it grabs a bunch of information. It gets all the information I need to be able to provision this. What virtual network I'm provisioning it into, what storage account, affinity group, that's the affinity group I need to make sure it gets provisioned properly. What image, and we're using a custom image, and all that information. And then it uses that to pipe into a PowerShell script that then builds that virtual machine. You can see the PowerShell script is actually pretty short. It takes me longer to assign all the variables than to actually run the PowerShell script. And this is actually published on the blog, so it's available there right now, and there's a link to it at the end of this presentation. So then it actually builds the. Now the nice thing about using PowerShell here is A, it takes advantage of you can quickly take advantage of new features that that Azure deploys. Typically when they deploy new features, they're available in PowerShell and they become available later in the UI. So this makes sure that you can use those features right away. You can edit that PowerShell script to include whatever new features they include. So for example, they announced one new feature which is pretty cool, which is the affinity groups will now be able to be not just sort of stamp-wide, but region-wide, and so that'll be interesting. So Azure is constantly evolving, so you need PowerShell to take advantage of that as quickly as possible. So now that we've provisioned the machine, now we're going to need to get its IP address. So this is straight Azure, so we bring in the server name, the published setting file so we can connect to Azure, and the storage account name. And then once we have that, we call that and get the machine name. Now we have to loop a little bit in here because that machine is still being created. So we really want to loop until that IP address becomes available. So it takes a little bit of time to do that. So this step will execute and loop every 10 seconds until it actually gets the IP address. Once we have the IP address, now we can join the domain. And this is where things get kind of interesting. If you look at what I'm bringing in here, you'll notice that, I'll call it out, we're not talking any Azure at this point. This is a standard, this script would work for an on-prem as well as for a cloud system. So we are accessing it through our stretched data center the same way we would any newly built machine. So in order to join the domain, we're not going through Azure. We're not going referencing the subscription or anything. We're now going through our Stretch data center to talk directly to the IP address of that machine. So now we switch from having to manage this as an Azure machine to managing it as just one of the machines in our network. So we join the domain. And once again, now it's just one of our machines. And then the next step was we install that SCOM agent. And that's just simply a command to install this is a bit of a trick. So I have a custom image, and I preloaded the software on there. I could have also copied it over the network, but that takes a bit of time. I like to pre-stage some software on my local image, so when I build it, I can have it talking to SCOM right away. So this deploys the SCOM agent with the proper parameters. And at that point now, we're being monitored. You'll notice that in here, there was a little bit of a pause. So after we joined the domain, it takes a bit of time for it to come up. So I have, in this link here, wait 2 minutes. So once we've joined the domain, I wait about 2 minutes for the machine to reboot and come up, and then I install the SCOM agent. And finally, the last thing is we do is we increment the server count. And this is a bit of trickiness here. So in Orchestrator, there's no sort of counter that you can continuously increment. It always starts brand new. So what I did was I bring in that server number that I used previously, and I set an existing variable to that server number. Then I increment that because there's a nice activity to do that. So I increment that counter. I delete the line from the text file. And finally, append that incremented number to the text file and save it. So then I have now my text file saved. Honestly, this should really be implemented in a SQL database or something like that, where it would be a shared repository that different runbooks could use. But this is simpler to see and to document. Once you start using SQL queries, it gets harder for people. You have to create a database, so on and so forth. So this is really easy. Anybody can create a text file. So one thing about this creating the VM problem, I'm going to refresh this, and I can see now that it's currently finished adding the VM to the domain, and it's now waiting that 2 minutes, and we'll start installing the SCOM agent. I wanted to show one other example of a runbook, because this is sort of one thing, and then I wanted to show one that you'd use all the time, and it sort of integrates with Configuration Manager as well. So we're tracking Configuration Manager baselines, and we also want to configure those baselines. So if I look at my technical workflows here, one of the things we do for we expect all of our systems to have that have a baseline assigned is that there'll be an app folder and an asset tag associated with it in the registry, so I can track that machine. And I could do this in the build server component, but I wanted to show this. So how do I execute that? So I'm going to go back to my SCOM console here, and I can see I have. If I wanted to stamp that baseline on a system, so I grab my Windows computers here, I grab a system that, say, doesn't have that baseline, configure baseline settings. So once again, I need to configure those baseline settings. In this case, it's just two, but if I had 100 baseline settings, it would be, once again, one click, and it would execute that runbook. So if I look at now, I jump back to my console. I can see that this is running. I'm going to look at my orchestration console and refresh that. I can see we're installing the SCOM agent. I was looking for my configured baseline, but I accidentally selected this Azure runbook, so I want to go back up to the top And here I can see my configure baseline already ran and completed. So now that machine, let me go down here. Server 14 now has that stamped on it. So let me go ahead and terminal server into that. So you notice I'm not doing anything special. This is a stretch data center. I'm just terminal serving to a computer the same way I would do if I any other computer within my network. I don't have to get an Azure connection or worry about a particular port or anything like that. I'm just terminal serving to it the way I would treat any other machine in my environment. And you notice I'm using my domain credentials, so I'm logging in as a domain administrator. So from a demo perspective, it's probably not the best thing to use extra small workloads because they tend to run really slow. They have very little processing power and not much memory, so it takes a little while for things to happen. And here we go. And what I want to do is look to see if my configuration baselines were set up. So this machine was generated this morning. So what I want to check is see, was the baseline set? And that would be that local directory and a registry setting with my asset tag number. So I'm going to launch regedit. Launching slowly. And now that that's come up, I should expect to see my company ABC, and I've stamped an asset tag in here. I would also expect to see that there's a new directory in the root of the C drive called apps that was created about 3 minutes ago. So I was able to configure my baseline, the things I need for my compliance, in there automatically, or with essentially one click of a button. By the way, that I'm using in this demo tasks, but I could do this based on alerts. So I could have an alert trigger the same tasks, so I can automate that and not even have to do that one click, but have it happen automatically. The last thing I wanted to show here was in operation and configuration manager, I wanted to show that these workloads, that every time I create an Azure workload and it joins the domain, it automatically gets a Configuration Manager client and becomes active and gets its, if there's baselines applied, if there's software deployed, that's all available. So for example, I would expect if I go to my system here, that I should be able to launch Software Center. Oops. I should be able to launch Software Center from Configuration Manager and see, even though this machine was created automatically, that it has software available for it. So I can see that's loading up. And I can see I have my packages that I expect to be available to all systems that I create, available and ready to go. So I could install these simply by clicking. Okay.
Thank you, Chris. It's always nice to be able to make sure that the demos work. And it's one of those things you spend like the weeks before tech ed, man, I hope that it works, especially with all this internet connectivity. So thanks, Chris, for having the demos go through and to test them out. wrapping up, so this session was about really showing you connectivity between your on-prem and the cloud. There are a lot of different steps that are inside there. As I mentioned, it's up on our blog. There's a handful of sessions that Microsoft has on breakout sessions, but we do want to be able to point you out. My blog site, networkworld.com/community/MoriMeadow. All the steps for building out the VMs, configuring Azure, configuring all the orchestrator steps that Chris showed you, those are all detailed out. So that way you have that information to go back to your labs, go back to your environments, and set this stuff up. There's a number of other things that Microsoft has available that we put up here. This is just not a generic slide. I spent a few moments to actually think through some of this stuff. But Microsoft has this thing called this Microsoft Azure Training Kit that has a lot of the PowerShell materials inside there. So as much as you can go to our blog site and you can kind of see what we've created and posted, if you just want to go through and for the first time connect your site to Azure through PowerShell, build up VMs, configure them, this whole training kit actually has 8 modules that will walk you step by step from creating PowerShell VMs up in Azure. So it's something that's worthwhile to go through and play with. The hydration kit for System Center, if you've ever want to build up a System Center environment, but you don't want to sit there and spend 3 days or 5 days building System Center, this hydration kit actually allows you to download the code and build out System Center with just a bunch of VMs, and we've been able to build it in less than about 4 or 5 hours, just going through and configuring it, and it builds out all the VMs for you. Connects them together, names them, and everything. So if you're really looking to quickly get System Center going in a lab, download that hydration kit, take a look at that. So just a number of things. These are in the download available. The standard Microsoft resources that are available, please write out an evaluation. I do ask that if you get a chance to fill out the evaluation, do so. If you know, we're not Microsoft folks, they call us back every year based on the response that we get from people attending. If you got value out of today's session, if you feel the real world stuff that Chris is able to show you is helpful, put in that feedback that you'd like us back again next year, and also provide some feedback as what kind of sessions you'd like us to be able to come back with. So that's it for the information. Thank you very much. We'll take questions. Come on up and be able to ask questions. We'll go through and answer whatever you guys have. Thank you very much. Have a good rest of the Tech Ed.